Welcome to the hottest podcast around. Good Things Come in Threes, with your expert panel of hosts, Pastor Jack Horner, Pastor Liz Fry, and Pastor John Brock.
Welcome to the podcast, Good Things Come in Threes, a podcast of Trinity Lutheran Church in Camp Hill, Pennsylvania. I'm Pastor Jack Horner, and I'm here with my colleagues, Pastor John Brock.
Hello there.
And Pastor Liz Fry.
Hey, friends.
And we are really, really excited about what we're going to be talking about today. But first of all, we want to thank everyone who tuned in last time for our conversation about summer. Of course, after we recorded it, Mother Nature decided to dip us back down into the 40s. But hopefully summer will make its way back again and we can all enjoy it. We did have a nice day yesterday. But today we've got some real special guests for our podcast. We have Pastor Jennifer and Deacon David Hope Tringali. Pastor for Jen served as Trinity's interim associate pastor in 2017 and 2018. And currently both of them are missionaries sponsored by the Lower Susquehanna Synod of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America in the Central American country of Guatemala. And they have an amazing ministry called Tree for Hope and Hope Academy. And we're really excited to talk to them about this exciting ministry that a number of our members have come to know and to love and are really looking forward to connect deeper in the future. So why don't you share with us? Well, first, say hi.
Hi, I'm Pastor for Jen or Jennifer, and I'm very excited to be here today.
And I'm Deacon David, and thanks again for having us. Great to be here.
Yeah, good to see both of you. So what drew you to Guatemala?
Well, it's kind of an interesting story because originally what drew me to Guatemala was the adoption of my first son. So I started as a parent and looking to connect with my son in Guatemala. And in particular, he was one, and I got toward the end of his adoption and asked if I could be his foster mother in Guatemala while the adoption was finishing. And so moved to Guatemala for what ended up being a couple months with my two young daughters and my young son, and kind of in a crazy fashion because I did not speak Spanish at all when I went. I just kind of thought my son needs me, so I'm going, and left to Guatemala.
Wow. Well, and of course you're a fluent Spanish speaker now.
Mostly. I wouldn't say 100%. Still studying some of the complicated tenses.
It's always a work in progress.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So you finished up that, you were down there. How long were you down there for the adoption process?
Well, the adoption process itself was much longer, but I lived there for 2 months, and in the 2 months had to learn some Spanish to get along. And in those 2 months also, our adoption agency was having their first ever Christmas parties. And I asked if I could go along and help out. And that really is what kind of put us on this projected path toward having a ministry in Guatemala.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. So what happened after that?
Yeah, so what happened then was at these Christmas parties, we were passing out gallon Ziploc bags with things like crayons and Play-Doh and stickers. And my daughters, who were 4 and 6, were helping to pass them out to the kids. And we were in orphanages that were very, very poor orphanages, but the kids were very animated and happy and loving. And the kids were receiving the Ziploc bag as their only Christmas gift. And they felt bad because my daughters did not have their own bag. And so they were opening their bags and trying to share their only Christmas gifts with my daughters. And I was in tears trying to say, please keep your Christmas gifts. My daughters have plenty. So what happened is we returned right before Christmas and walked into what was my house at that point, which the kitchen was about the same size as a dormitory I had seen 24 kids living in. And my 6-year-old daughter turned and said to me, what are we going to do for the children who are still in Guatemala? Wow. And that question changed my life.
Wow. So how long was it then from when you did the adoption to starting this ministry, Tree for Hope?
Well, it kind of started organically in that with that question, we decided as a family to return to Guatemala every year at Christmas time and help the adoption agency, and really started working with churches and youth groups to create these fleece blankets. I'm sure many listeners have made them. They're the fleece blankets. You cut the fringes and you tie the knots. And the idea was each child would have one and it would show that they were cared about by somebody, by a child, by another child. Mm-hmm. And so we started going back the next Christmas, but then people very quickly started asking if they could come with me. And so about 6 months after the first Christmas, the second Christmas, technically, the first Christmas, we took 385 blankets. And then about 6 months later, a couple people asked to go. And then my home congregation at that was Tree of Life. And they had said, could we come along with you too? And so very shortly after the adoption, groups started asking if they could come. And the adoption agency said, hey, we have this one orphanage, Hogar Miguel Magone, and we would really like you to coordinate humanitarian aid for them, for us. Would you do that? And so that began in 2004, a long-term partnership that turned into our starting Tree for Hope ministry.
Excellent. So where is the Hogar Miguel orphanage located?
So the orphanage is in a municipality called Mixco, and it's near this village called Aguacate, which means avocado. And though Mixco is a suburb of Guatemala City, the area of Aguacate is quite rural. Some of the people who live in that area have never been to the main road that goes between Guatemala City and Antigua. So it's kind of off the road between Guatemala City and Antigua, but yet it's rural. And the orphanage has been there since not long before my first trip to Guatemala. And they have been also focusing on helping families in the neighboring village of Aguacate. But the orphanage originally started as a boys' orphanage, and now they have been able to build a girls' orphanage so that they can have brothers and sisters together. So the girls' orphanage is Hogar Maria Auxiliadora. And together, the two orphanages who are right next door to each other house about 80 children.
And it really, having visited there with you, as a matter of fact, a couple years ago before the COVID shutdown, it really operates almost more as a community center, right? Because it really, as you said, it brings in a lot of children, because there were a lot more than 80 kids running around when we were there.
Yeah, they do. They really do. When it's not COVID times, you never even know who inside the orphanage is one of the kids living in the orphanage and who
is from
the village, because everybody is treated as if they're part of the same family. And so a lot of children from the village, and when I say a lot, it's 250, 350 kids,
right?
A lot, come to the orphanage to receive food, also homework help, because so many parents are illiterate. The orphanage for years and years has been providing tutoring. And again, they'll provide this homework help alongside the kids that are in the orphanage. And so really treating the whole village of Aguacate as if it was an extended community.
Yeah, yeah. I would imagine that helps too with kids that are orphans, there might be some stigma related to that, you know, especially as it relates to the wider community, and that this is a place where the wider community kind of embraces the ministry of the orphanage, and the kids are mixing nicely and they're all kind, you know, learning, they're all playing games together. I imagine it's helpful for them to be a part of that wider community because they're so receptive to having them come in and providing really excellent care for all of the kids, regardless.
Yeah, for sure. And that stigma is definitely there. We've talked about that often, the directors of the orphanage and myself, because they really focus their music program on trying to combat that stigma, not just with the village, the neighboring village, but in particular with those from higher economic status who might look down on the children from the village being poor or the children from the orphanage being from very poor, very tenuous situations. And so particularly with their music program, they strive to have both kids from the orphanage and the village learning the national instrument of the marimba, learning how to play guitar and keyboards and percussion instruments with Profe Marlin, our excellent music teacher. And then what they do is they try to offer concerts. During COVID, they've even continued doing virtual concerts, but they try to have the kids actually go to locations and perform their musical concerts so that people can have a different view of what it means to be a kid in an orphanage or in a very poor village, along with the benefits of the kids who maybe don't get along wonderfully in the orphanage, being on a musical team together. And so they have to learn how to participate together and be on that musical team and make music together and rely on each other and learn some things about trusting each other and participating in a program like music together. So that's
And for those of you that don't know, a marimba is a percussion instrument. It's like a xylophone, except the metal plates are actually made out of wood, right? So it's got a little bit of a it's a different kind of sound, but very similar to like a xylophone, right?
Yeah, and you can have up to 9 kids playing the marimba at the same time. It's 2 pieces. That are one plays higher tones and the other piece plays lower tones. And so you have to really work as a team on a marimba because you can have up to 9 people playing at the same time in the same space.
Yeah. On the same instrument. So it's a big instrument.
Huge. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's really, it's really neat and it sounds wonderful. And you can tell there's a lot of pride, not only for the players, but also for people listening, because, you know, it's one of those instruments that is really, I mean, it's really, isn't it really very much just a Guatemalan instrument, or is it Central American?
I'm not sure. I think it's Central American, but I know in Guatemala, like, it's made from particular wood from particular locations.
Okay.
But whenever teams come, the orphanage always loves to coordinate a concert because,
yeah,
you know, the kids practice, they have music lessons sometimes twice a week, but they don't have like the parental community to go to the concert and, you know, say, yay, and way to go, bravo. And so when the teams come, it's a special time where they can perform and they can have, you know, audience that cheers them on and claps and just gets all excited and takes photos and videos. And they love having that musical ministry.
Yeah, it's really special. Pastor Liz and I got to see one of those little concerts, and it was really quite excellent.
Yeah, I was going to say that we should share some of those videos with all of you who are listening, because the kids are so talented.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
The joy just like oozes out of them while they're sharing this talent with people, and it's just so cool to watch.
Well, you know what? I think with our wonderful producer, Danielle, there will be a way for us to be able to share some of that music.
Very good.
Yeah. So tell us about Hope Academy. How did that come to be?
Well, Hope Academy is our bilingual STEAM school for girls. And STEAM means science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. And we are the first STEAM bilingual girls school in Guatemala. And it came to be really from years and years of dreaming with the director of the orphanage, Karen Rodas. And she and I would often sit and just talk and observe that there were so many girls from the village. And when they were young, they often wouldn't be in school for a variety of reasons. One of the reasons is the school would often say they didn't have space for them. They would give the space to the boys. The boys were more culturally the accepted ones to be going to school, and the girls might be kept at home to help with laundry or housework or caring for other children. And then we would also see that girls who started school were dropping out, sometimes before sixth grade, and often escaping bad family situations, having a boyfriend, having children very, very young. And this cycle just went on and on. And it was so sad because there'd be these girls that you would know from 5 years old, and then you'd see their potential and they'd be excited about school and excited about math class. And then by sixth grade, they were done. They just kind of dropped off. And so we started visioning, like, what would it look like to have a school that could focus specifically on girls, that would be able to provide support to the girls and their families and really focus on keeping girls in school? Because we know a lot about how beneficial that is to the whole community. So that came that was a dream for years. And then we started looking for land, and that took a long time to find a piece of land that we could afford, that was in a good location. It took about 3 years, and then it took about 3 years to pay off the land. So I know you focus on good things come in threes. Well, we had a lot of threes for Hope Academy. And then it took 3 years to really get the school kind of from ground up built and functioning. And so now we have our building that still we are looking to add things to, but we have what we minimally need to have grades up through sixth grade in our school. So we have from preschool through sixth grade right now, and focusing on the girls from the orphanage and the neighboring village, but looking in the next 3 years to add girls from the local village where the school is situated, which is a different village, Santa Lucia Mil Fas Altas, St. Lucia of the High Corn, and also girls who are Native English speakers who live in and around Antigua.
Yeah. And so you really, with the building of this school, you really did pretty much the same thing that Trinity did a number of years ago, where we came up with a master plan, right? We knew we weren't probably going to be able to do everything at once, but you wanted to at least know where you're going and what could be the future steps, the next steps. So you've put that together with how many classrooms now at this point?
Oh, let's see. We have 6 classrooms. We have 6 classrooms. Several of our classrooms have 2 grades combined.
Right, right. And then and then you can expand into like dormitories, right, I believe, for that second floor when that comes time for that. And you do have plenty of other land to be able to expand even beyond that.
Yeah, David's been working a lot with the architect and also with Messiah University, actually. We should talk about what's going on for the second floor and beyond.
COVID's really made us dream a little bit differently about how we want the future of the school to work. And so working with our architect, we're actually designing an outdoor classroom space on the second floor, which we're really excited about because, you know, you and Pastor Liz have been to the land, you know how picturesque it is, you know how perfect the weather is most of the year in Guatemala. And we figured, why take that experience away from the kids when they're in the classroom? Why not integrate it into their learning experience? And so on the second floor of the building, we'll have a nice double-sized outdoor classroom looking right out onto the volcanoes off in the distance there. And then right next to that, we're working on the housing and dormitories for some of our girls. Unfortunately, because of COVID, we've seen a lot of the family systems issues that many of our kids struggle with really get exacerbated at home. And so the parents are gone for long periods of time, having to work in jobs all over the place. The issues of neglect and domestic violence are really just coming on full force right now. And a lot of the kids don't necessarily have the support network at home to thrive in their education. And so we're hoping sooner than later we can get the second floor built so we can start housing the girls there and make sure they've got the team they need to guide them in this really formative process of their life so that they accelerate in education. And like Jennifer said, we've also been working with Messiah University to upgrade the rest of the land. We're working with their solar engineering department to get panels installed on the school. Being a technology school, we want to live into that with what we're doing. So solar power as a clean energy solution is something we'll talk about in science class, that the girls can see live how it works and how it powers their building. And they've also designed a playground for us and an outdoor sports court. And we're hoping in the near future, we'll also be working with them on some agriculture and hydroponic farming.
So that's a good segue, because I have a question.
Yeah.
Could you tell our listeners a little bit more about what surrounds the school?
Yeah. So our school is located on an avocado farm. We have about 250 avocado trees running down the backside of the property. And again, being STEAM focused and science focused, we like to work that into the education as much as we can. One of Jennifer's dreams going into it was teaching our girls how to be sustainable and how to use the land around them and how to grow some of their own food, and even then to take it a step further and how to run a small business and market some of it. And so once we're beyond COVID, our hope is to have, you know, market day a few times a year where the girls can take the avocados that are growing on the land and take them out into the community and come up with a little business plan and a little booth and sell them to some of the locals to both integrate with the community and to give them that experience interacting and that business negotiation type of setting as well.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And for our listeners, you have never tasted anything so good as an avocado right off of the tree. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. I don't know how long it takes for us to get our avocados in the supermarket, but those 5 or 6 days that it takes to get them up here. Anyway, I can still taste it right now. It's just so good. So it was years ago, but anyway, love those avocados. So COVID of course has been something that's been on everybody's minds for well over a year, and you know, wondering how is it affecting other countries. So how has it affected Guatemala and especially the orphanage and the school?
Well, I'll speak to the school. The school, we had to really, we're up to about a staff of 17 people at this point. And so we really had to figure out how we were going to educate the girls using a distance education model in a situation where girls have no laptops, no tablets, sometimes no access to internet signal, sometimes no access to a telephone. We pretty early realized we needed to create weekly guides that are paper. So our cost of printing and copying went up exponentially this year, because every week our girls need to receive a paper packet that has very simple instructions, because again, most of our girls do not have parents who are literate. So their parents cannot read the homework instructions to them. So if the girls are not reading, we have to send instructions that are picture-based to try to get across the idea of what they need to do on the page. And then the teachers, you know, we started problem solving, and they came up with this wonderful solution where we basically bought a whole bunch of what I will call dummy telephones, and we took the SIM cards out so they don't function as a telephone. But instead, we got memory cards for them. So our teachers will do video lessons for every day, for multiple classes a day. They'll do short video lessons. They'll load them onto the memory card. And then once a week, we will drive out to the village, and the parents will come with the phone, and the memory card will be exchanged. So the new memory card with the new videos go into the phone. And then the guide gets received and then give the new one given to the kids each week. And in addition to that, we've been working to try to get access to a telephone of some sort with all of our girls so that they can receive video calls from their teachers every week and their individual calls. So every girl is called by multiple teachers, if possible, every week to problem solve what they're not understanding, to check by video call. If you can imagine, like, just them trying to hold their phone up to their guide and show the teachers what they've done that week. So that's how our teachers are doing education. And our staff is meeting about 3 times a week to problem solve, because we have a lot of problems to solve at any given time. So it's really been a struggle. We have girls who have had to be removed from their houses due to domestic violence. We have girls whose parents are working 2 hours away, so they live at their job all week. And the girls are passed around between grandma and aunt and uncle. And so we're trying to find girls for their education. We've got girls who just simply have nobody around to guide them through their homework during the day. And some of them are also taking care of younger siblings. So we've even had to do some things like, could we find teachers that, not a teacher, but like a guide, basically a young adult who could help just guide them through their process each week. Because think of a second grader trying to understand an agenda that they have to follow every week that includes videos and video calls and papers and homework worksheet pages. So to have this young adult who can guide some of our students through that each day for a few hours is another strategy we've been using. The orphanage, why don't you speak to the orphanage and the food, because this has been a huge focus as well.
Yeah, so it became very clear to us very early on when COVID started in Guatemala that it was going to cause a lot of problems for the village and the orphanage. I don't know if we all remember back in March when everything started to shut down, but in Guatemala, things shut down. Buses stopped. There were curfews in place. If you were out after 5 or 6 o'clock most nights, you could get arrested. It was a mess. And it really became apparent very quickly that a lot of people in the village of Aguacate were starving. They had no way to get to their jobs because the buses weren't working. Many of their businesses had closed, and all of the people doing like day labor and construction had nowhere to go. And so we started an emergency food relief program. We basically thought it would go on for, you know, 3 months or so until things leveled out. But to this day, we continue doing it every month. And through donations, we've gotten a lot from Trinity Camp Hill members. So thank you anyone who's donated to that cause. We're able to provide a large shipment of beans and rice and eggs and some nutrition supplements as well, to make sure that all of these families have food to put on the plates of everyone in their household every day. We've even been able to do some nice things for the holidays for them as well, to keep a little bit of like festive Christmas spirit alive, for example. But that program continues, and we plan on probably until September doing it unless we get any sort of notice that it's going to need to go on longer.
Yeah, and actually, I just got a phone call from Guatemala yesterday. The food prices have gone up. So it was costing about $1,500 per month for 90 families, which is over 500 people, to provide food. But now it's heading upwards of $2,000. So the cost of food is getting a lot of people survive on a lot of corn to make tortillas and then rice and beans. And some of these are imported. And so the supply is down, the cost is up. And so it's really still a struggle. And then the orphanage, same thing. I mean, they basically had to shut their gates. So whereas before, you know, we just talked about how they would welcome up to 350 children from the village inside the orphanage, they could not do that when COVID hit. They needed to be able to show the government they were protecting the children that they're in guardianship of. So they had to close their gates, and then they don't even have their children. Their children are all doing virtual education. So now the directors and all the caregivers, instead of having, you know, the kids at school for half a day and having a little bit of a break, all 80 kids are there all day, every day, 24/7. And but they have viewed this really as, how can we find blessings in disguise, and said, wow, you know, we've now been spending so much time with some of the kids. We didn't know that they had some of the talents they have. Some of them are very good at this, and some are good at that, and some have developed this hobby, and some have developed that. And we wouldn't even know that if it hadn't been for COVID. So they're keeping a really positive attitude while at the same time trying to keep the 90 kids busy and now educated.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that what we're going to look back over this year? I mean, one of our first, I think it was our first podcast, was what have we learned through this process with COVID? And we actually discovered a whole bunch of things that we just weren't doing before that we had to learn how to do quickly. Even this podcast is one of those things. And you know, of course, it was a difficult year and situation to go through, but you know, thank God that we were able to learn things about ourselves and about ministry, and maybe about how ministry needed to become in the future. And what COVID did was it just sped it up a lot, because it would have probably taken us a lot longer to get there. But we were kind of forced our hand to really move forward with a lot of those things.
Well, if I can jump in, I just have a quick question. Man. You're talking about the food bank and whatnot. So how can we here in Pennsylvania support the ministry?
That's a great question. We have a few ways to do it. One, we have a food sponsorship program. You can sign up on our website. It's treeforhope.org, tree4hope.org. And it's $20 a month, and that guarantees that one of the kids in the village or the orphanage is going to have fresh fruits, vegetables, and meats at all of their meals. And so the more food sponsorships we get now, the more we can add to these deliveries, which we're now feeding a whole lot more people with than just the children in the community.
Sure.
The second thing is to come to a fundraiser. We're really grateful that we are finally able to start having some in-person events again. And so on June 25th, we'll be hosting our first in-person fundraiser in over a year. It's going to be at the Backyard Beer Garden, which is located at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Penryn, Pennsylvania, out toward the Renaissance Fair. And that'll run from 5 to 8 o'clock at night. We're going to have live music via Tim Craven and his family. And we're going to have barbecue food trucks and craft beer and lawn games. And it should be a great time to just enjoy each other's company and raise some money for a good cause. And most importantly, you can just keep us in your prayers. Jennifer and I really believe that so much of this ministry is sustained by people just lifting it up every day in their own prayers. Because we've always had just what we needed when we needed. And I think a lot of you guys are to thank for that.
For sure. And we always really welcome you to join us in Guatemala, to come and meet some of the people, build some relationship as you've already done. We do have groups starting to travel again in 2022. And so we're looking forward to having more time with some people from PA and Guatemala and able to show you in person. You're welcome to visit us anytime, but we often have groups come together so that we can show you the school, the orphanage, the village, and you can meet people and you can hear their stories and you can understand a little bit more the struggle, and then you can share in that struggle together. And that's really what we love to do, is to connect people. And if any of the projects we mentioned today are interesting to anybody, contact us, because we are already trying to fundraise for some of the things that we talked about with the school building and the land and all of those things too. So
great. Yeah. And that was a great experience doing the mission trip down there, not only because, you know, part of the time we did a vacation Bible school, like a smaller version of some of the vacation Bible school that we did. We found resources in Spanish to be able to do that. That was a lot of fun. And then also a lot of us, you know, some of us anyway, went over to the school and were able to do some landscaping work that you needed to have happen there as well. So that was a lot of fun as well. Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard work, but it's good work, right?
It is hard work, but it was good work. Yeah. And
for you guys who were there for VBS, didn't the kids just lose their minds over it?
Oh, they loved it. Yeah, they loved it, and of course we enjoyed being there and seeing all the kids. There's a lot of love in those places. There's a lot of love in those places, and really great people to meet and to get to see their life and to be able to share in that. That certainly makes it really 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 special. Pastor Liz, you're part of your responsibility in our congregation is to work with not only local ministries that are doing some great work in our community, but also some national and international ministries.
Yeah.
Do you want to share some things about what's happening through the ministry of Trinity?
Sure. Well, so if any of these things that Jennifer and David have talked about sound interesting to you, I'd love to get you plugged in to our missions team, because not only in Guatemala, we support missionaries in Germany, and we hope to eventually host them here. We have ties with another ministry of the ELCA, the Young Adults and Global Missions Program, which is near and dear to my heart. I wouldn't be sitting here with all of you if it wasn't for that program. So we've got our hands in lots of different places, so to speak. And so I'd love to chat more about it with folks if you'd like to join us.
Yeah, that's great. That's really, really great. Well, David and Jen, I really thank you for spending some time with us to be able to talk about this ministry that you have given your lives to. And we are just thankful to God for the Spirit working in your hearts and through all the people and volunteers that you have that have done so much really great work through Hope Academy and through Tree for Hope. So we just want to really thank you and affirm that ministry and just affirm you as leaders in the church doing some really, really great work. People need to hear about it. So I would ask for everybody to continue to be the church wherever you happen to be and however God is calling you. Jesus is Lord, and let's not ever forget to share the good news. So thank you for joining us, and we hope you join us next time when we're actually going to be talking about fatherhood in some of the same ways that we talked about motherhood, and we're going to talk about fatherhood in our next podcast. So seek the good,
be the good,
share the good,
because good things come in threes. Pastor Jen, would you lead us in a blessing?
That would be my honor. May God bless you and keep you. Que Dios los bendiga y los guarde. May God's grace hold you. Que la gracia de Dios te sostenga. And may God, Padre, Hijo y Espíritu Santo, equip and empower you, lo equipen y lo capaciten, to worship, connect, and serve, para adorar, conectar y servir. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you so much. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.